Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some great conversations lined up for you. In a moment, we're going to spend some time with the top Facebook executive to learn what they're doing on multiple fronts to help in our battle against COVID-19. Also, the reopening of schools continues to be a huge focus across the country. I'll be joined by a mental health expert to discuss the dynamics between college-age students, loneliness, and technology. To get things started, I'm joined now by KX Jin, the head of health at Facebook. KX, thank you for spending some time with us. So I'd be doing my audience a disservice if I didn't start with your backstory. You met Mark Zuckerberg on the first day of class at Harvard. Talk about a life-changing interaction.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me. And yeah, gosh, that was over a decade ago, and I don't think any of us could have predicted where we'd be today.
And you were part of the team that built the first version of Newsfeed. So you've been intimately involved with Facebook, basically since the very beginning.
Yeah, that's right. I joined in 2006, 2 weeks before we launched Newsfeed. So it was a very exciting and interesting time to join the company. Spent a few years working on Newsfeed as a software engineer, spent several years in ads. And at this point, it'll be 14 years at Facebook next week.
Obviously, what all of you have created over there at Facebook has changed the world. I can only imagine what it must be like to have been a part of that from the very beginning. Did you have any idea when you were first putting this website together that it would evolve into what it is today?
I don't think so. It's kind of been a journey, and I don't think anyone in the early days could have predicted that. I think I was one of the first 10 or 20 users of the site, and if you'd asked me then that it would be something used all over the world, I would not have believed you.
Well, I'll tell you, when I first logged on in college, I can assure you, I didn't realize it becomes such a major part of life all these years later. Let's talk about your role as head of health, which happened about a year and a half ago. What was the original purpose for this particular initiative over at Facebook?
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. So about 2 years ago, actually, after really seeing how people were already using Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger for a lot of these health-related support needs, whether it's patients connecting with each other or clinicians connecting with each other, we at Facebook decided to create a dedicated team to better support this area as part of our overall social impact work. And so that was about the time when I came over to lead this effort.
And I know blood donations were a big part of the initial work that you were doing as the head of health. Talk a little bit about that and why that became a focus.
Yeah, it's a great question. The unifying theme behind a lot of our work here is helping bring people and organizations together in ways that improve health. And one of the things we were seeing was a lot of people already using Facebook and WhatsApp to help build awareness of the need for blood donations. And a lot of the blood organizations actually already using these products to recruit donors. So we thought we could better support this need by building a dedicated product for blood donations. And we make it really easy for people to sign up to volunteer to be notified when there's need locally nearby. And we work really closely with blood organizations around the world who are trying to build a stable blood supply for folks. And they onboard to our tools and are able to notify people who have signed up to come in and donate when there are needs.
I'm joined by KX Jin, the head of health over at Facebook here on iHeartRadio Communities. Before we get to COVID-19, aside from blood donations, were there other health initiatives that you were actively involved in from the beginning as head of health?
Yeah, it's been an early journey, and I think we're still very early in our journey, but we've been doing a lot around our Data for Good efforts, too. Certainly, that program has been around for a year or two, and has been a lot of these things have been accelerated because of COVID-19, but working to provide public health experts with data and tools is another thing our team works on.
I want to turn to the coronavirus now. I'm sure this was something you didn't imagine being in the middle of so soon as head of health at Facebook, but here we are. How did this pandemic unfold for you, and when did you and your team really start to take notice and realize this was going to be your main priority for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't think this is anything anyone really anticipated at the end of last year. For us, our work really started, our work around COVID really started towards the end of January. This was when we started hearing from some of our partners, like the WHO, that there was a growing potential for a pandemic. And so that's when we really started getting organized. We're also a global company, so a lot of our initial response at the end of January was in Asia and some of the regions that were originally affected. Although obviously at this point, we're working on this across the world.
There are a number of different initiatives related to COVID-19 that Facebook is involved in. One big issue you've been working to address is misinformation about the pandemic. How does that process work, and how big of an undertaking is that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a huge part of our response, is helping connect people with credible information and support from trusted sources. And we work extremely closely with public health experts and organizations for this, whether that's the WHO, the CDC, or other individual experts. I think at this point, we've connected over 2 billion people worldwide to resources from these authorities through things like the COVID-19 Information Center on Facebook, which is designed to be the primary place to get all authoritative information, as well as government helplines and other helplines on WhatsApp and Messenger. It's also been super inspiring for me to see people using our tools to support each other. People have raised over $100 million in COVID-19 related fundraisers on Facebook. And a lot of these are actually around supporting local communities. For example, earlier in the pandemic, a couple of parents in Vermont started a fundraiser that ended up raising thousands of dollars for their school janitorial staff. And there's a lot of really difficult things going on in the world, but seeing people really step up and help each other has been incredibly inspiring.
Facebook also invested $100 million in the news industry. You're looking to support fact checkers. That's obviously a big part of combating misinformation, especially during a time of a public health crisis. Talk about your relationship with different news organizations, how you work with them, and how you decide who's trustworthy for a mission like that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that. Since January, we've taken pretty aggressive steps to both limit the spread of misinformation as well as connect people with reliable information. And I think these are really important to take into account together, because misinformation really thrives in the absence of credible and trusted information, since what everyone ultimately wants are the resources to keep themselves and their families safe. And so this is why we've been investing so much in helping people connect to this information. We are generally not the experts around health, right? And we shouldn't be. And this is also why it's really important that we work with the experts themselves, both in terms of helping feature and amplify their information, as well as working with them to help on the fact-checking side and determine what are the things that are true and not true around here.
And that kind of ties in with you as well, because you have a computer science background, not a medical background, but you are the head of health for Facebook, and you're open about the fact that, you know, you rely on experts and their expertise to help guide you in your current role.
Yeah, that's right. I think probably with most things, but definitely with health, it really takes the whole community to come together to address a lot of these challenges, right? If you're dealing with a health challenge, you end up relying on your friends, your family, caregivers, your care team, clinicians, if you're fortunate enough to have access to care. Our role is not really to be the health expert. Our role is to help connect people to these experts and really to support these experts in their work. And I'm tremendously grateful to be able to do that every day.
I'm joined by KX Jin, the head of health at Facebook here on iHeartRadio Communities. You've also, over at Facebook, done a lot of support for health and economic relief efforts. You've made donations to support COVID-19 relief efforts, including $25 million to help out healthcare workers on the front line, which is very important. Talk a little bit about those efforts and some of the investments that have been made in small businesses, too.
Thanks. That's a great question. As you know, unfortunately, the effects of COVID have been super broad, right? Both the direct health effects and the indirect effects around the stressors going on, job losses, and so on. And, we don't have all the solutions, but we are definitely doing our part to try to help here. And so on the small and SMB side, we were, I think, one of the first companies to roll out a grant program for some of the SMBs. who might be affected. And so that was a program we did earlier in the pandemic. And more broadly, we've just been trying to find ways to help across the board.
Have you found that Facebook has become a really crucial tool for a lot of small businesses that have had to scale back with advertising or have had to get information out to their customer base about changes they've made, you know, restaurants switching to takeout and delivery and all of that?
You know, it's been a while since I've worked on ads directly, but, you know, speaking personally, I've been getting really great updates from my local grocery store on Facebook, of all places. And, you know, they were running into shortages. They were, you know, like not always having things stocked, but they're now actually posting every day about what's available and what's not. And, you know, I'm tremendously grateful to the essential workers like those at grocery stores. And I've been personally surprised at how valuable their Facebook posts have been for me and the other people in the community.
Well, some anecdotal evidence, but I think you could certainly apply that more broadly because I've seen the same thing. I'm joined by KX Jindy, head of health over at Facebook here on iHeartRadio Communities. The final aspect of Facebook's response to COVID-19 is just trying to keep people connected. Talk a little bit about how that works and what the focus is there.
Yeah, I think this spans beyond just health, right? It's fundamentally like what the Facebook family of products really do. It's around helping you keep connected with your friends and family. And so earlier in the pandemic, we had to invest a lot simply just to keep our services up and running, given the increased demands we were seeing. It was, I think, particularly challenging given that a lot of us were unable to come to the office and all had to work remotely. So we weren't perfect there. There were a few hitches, but I think by and large, we were able to keep the services up and running, which was great. And from a personal perspective, I've been doing a lot of video calls. My parents are older Americans who live down the street, and we're still trying to keep more distance from them than we would otherwise. So I've been, you know, video calling them every day and really grateful for all the tools that are available.
And last thing I want to touch on, World Mask Week. This is an initiative that the Pandemic Action Network, which you're connected to, has really been working hard on raising awareness for the effectiveness of masks in mitigating the spread of the coronavirus. Talk about Facebook's involvement in that initiative and why that's so important.
Thanks. I appreciate you asking. So experts are pretty clear now that wearing a mask is a simple step we can all take to help reduce the spread of COVID-19. And our priority here has really been to support these experts. And I think one thing that was interesting for me to learn from these folks is that it's important, wearing a mask is important both to protect yourself, but also to protect other people, because it's possible that sometimes you might be infectious and not know it. So we've been doing a lot to help build awareness of this in partnership with these experts. Since early July, we've put some alerts at the top of Facebook and Instagram to remind everyone to wear face coverings. We also have launched some features like a customizable avatar that features mask wearing that you can make as your profile picture and the wear a mask hashtag. And so we're hopeful to do more and hopeful to help build awareness here. And for me personally, wearing a mask is especially important since my parents are older, they're in their 70s, and I want to do my best to try to keep them safe. It definitely took a little bit of getting used to since I've now found a cloth mask that fits pretty well. And if my kids are able to figure this out, they're 2 and 4, I feel like I should be able to figure this out as well.
KX Jin, the head of health at Facebook. We really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for the work you're doing over there. And thank you for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities.
Thank you.
Finally, I'm joined by Dr. Danielle Ramo, the Senior Director of Research at Hope Lab, to talk about the impact of the coronavirus on the mental health of young adults and how that plays into the reopening of schools. Dr. Ramo, thank you for your time. Let's start with the work that you do at Hope Lab.
Sure, Ryan. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Hope Lab is a social innovation lab. We build behavior change tech to support teen and young adult health and well-being. We started off, and our legacy is in cancer survivorship. Our first product was a video game that helped young people with cancer take control over their illness by taking chemotherapy medication. And we've been still involved with a population of young people that has cancer. We made a chatbot to support young people who were coming back into their lives after they had undergone cancer treatment. And now we're also working with other populations of young people. We've made an app to support a nurse home visiting training program called the Nurse Family Partnership that is working nationwide to support first-time parents. And we're also working in three other areas where we're addressing the mental health of LGBTQ plus teens right now. We're also working in an area that I've been working in for many years in my role as a psychologist, including teen vaping, trying to figure out how to help young people quit vaping through social media. And finally, as you mentioned in your introduction, we're addressing the high rate of loneliness among college students today with an app called Nod.
Before we get to the impact of this pandemic on the mental health of college-age students, what were you seeing in terms of the connection between technology and potential mental health issues among that demographic?
Yeah, so there were two really important trends around loneliness that were concerning to us at Hope Lab, who uses tech to support teen health. The first is that young people are the loneliest generation alive today. A lot of people think that loneliness is an affliction among the elderly. And while it is an issue among older adults, younger people, including those of college age, 18 to 25 or so, are reporting loneliness at greater levels than even older adults. And this was happening pre-COVID. This is partly because loneliness is not about how many people are around us. And of course, at college before COVID, we were in a situation to be around a lot of people in any given time. But loneliness instead is about our understanding of where we are and where we want to be. And there was a really big discrepancy among young people in that place. So they came into college often really having high hopes about meeting their best friends for life and feeling like it was going to be really easy to do so. And then often found that it wasn't as easy as they expected. And we think that really is contributing to the fact that many college students were saying that we're lonely. So in the United States, to give you a sense of that, a third of college students reported feeling very lonely in the last month, and two-thirds reported feeling very lonely in the last year. And this was all before shelter-in-place orders happened because of the pandemic in the spring.
I'm joined by Dr. Danielle Ramo, the Senior Director of Research at Hope Lab here on iHeartRadio Communities. You know, some may think that with all the technology available today, so many ways to connect with others, that may alleviate loneliness. But it sounds like in some circumstances, it could be having the opposite effect.
Well, just like with any tool that is as ubiquitous as technology is today, there are some positive features and there are some negative features associated with technology. There's no doubt that some of the ways that young people engage with technology probably isn't helping that much, right? Unfortunately, social media often makes us feel bad after we use it. And for those who are things like depression and anxiety already, those feelings can be heightened, especially when interacting with social media all day, every day. So I definitely don't recommend that that happens. However, there are some really positive ways to use technology. We believe in that quite strongly at Hope Lab, and we try to create tools that support young people making positive, deep, and meaningful connections. Now, in the case of Nod, the app we've made to address the high rate of loneliness, we're asking young people to use technology to learn more about how to connect both digitally and in the real world with other people, and then get off their devices and go make those connections. Now, we actually offer support at two levels because we recognize that for college students this fall, there are a lot of different scenarios. Some people will be entirely virtual, and the way that they're able to make new connections is only going to be through things like virtual meetings where all of their classes will be online. And in those cases, we offer tips to support young people trying to get in there and meet new people, as well as go deeper with the friends that they may already have connected with through college. And we also encourage those students who are able to be in person through classes to use skills to make more connections as well. So we're trying to meet the needs of a bunch of different scenarios in this unprecedented kind of crazy year.
Have you found that because this younger generation is online so much, they're spending so much time on devices, has that changed how they interact with each other or with those of a different age group?
Yeah, so this generation is distinct from others, this younger generation of teens and young adults today, because they were entirely born into the age of social media, and digital connections have been part of their reality from the time they were quite young. And that means that the way they interact in the real world might be a little different than those of us who grew up without technology as an option. Now, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily worse at making connections, but it's just that when you grow up where digital connections are so easy and so quick, and it's so simple to kind of push that like button and get and give feedback all day long and things like text messages and social media, that the way that we interact in the real world, when it's different, sometimes our expectations might be a little bit different from that. And it might be hard to process the feelings that come when things don't necessarily go our way. So those are some of the skills that we believe are particularly important to boost in young people today, help give them strategies to meet people, go deeper, and even do so digitally in addition to in the real world, as well as process the feelings when things aren't so great.
I'm joined by Dr. Danielle Ramo, the Senior Director of Research at Hope Lab here on iHeartRadio Communities. Aside from Generation Z feeling lonely, are there any other behavioral challenges that group is experiencing more so than previous generations?
Well, there are a lot of what we call correlates of loneliness, things that are related to loneliness that we know are heightened in this generation. And frankly, are increasing over time, and this really is concerning. So these are things like feelings of or experiencing clinical depression or anxiety. And one thing that really concerns me as a clinical psychologist who works in tech and mental health is that the folks who are saying that they're very lonely and those who are experiencing symptoms of depression, anxiety, and having other kinds of problems that go along with those things, like poor sleep, maybe not being as physically active or having poor eating and other health behaviors, folks who have those clusters of problems are more likely to have negative experiences when they interact on tech. So it's harder to have technology be a supportive, safe, and comfortable place if we're already really emotionally vulnerable. So we really believe in using technology to kind of build up and boost the way that we process our interactions so that we can support those folks who are particularly at risk for things like depression, anxiety, poor sleep, and other things.
Back in April, as the shutdown was underway, you clearly knew that loneliness was going to be a major problem, especially among young adults. And you put together a list of a few tips to help them get through that period of social isolation. Tell us about that advice.
Sure. So we were making a tool to support a high rate of loneliness in college students. And we started out by promoting that people get off their phones and get out there in the real world. So one strategy that can continue to happen, whether college classes are in person or not, is to not be afraid to try something new. So something that you haven't necessarily wanted to do before, but are open to and have an open frame. So this could be anything from seeing someone that you know, you've seen in class, you think this could be a connection that would be worthwhile, but before this, you might not have been willing to jump out there, take the risk and say hello. Be open to doing that, especially this year. This is such a crazy time that we think risks are really going to pay off quite a bit more than in other times. And frankly, what do we have to lose, right? So I really encourage people to have an open mind and to take risks more than they ever had before. We also encourage people not to blame themselves if things don't go wrong. So if things don't go right. So if you do try to reach out to someone, say hello, and because you're wearing a mask, they can't hear what you're saying and they keep their eyes down on their phone and they don't connect with you, really notice your reaction to that and try not to blame yourself. It could be that they just didn't hear you, right? We also encourage parents to talk to teens about what their social world is going to look like in college this year. So that could mean encouraging them to get out there on campus in a safe way, in a socially distanced way, wearing a mask, or if they're online and virtual, try to encourage your children who are home doing their college classes to take those extra few minutes, reach out to someone who may have been in their class and ask for a study date. Maybe there's someone who is in a breakout room in a class who seemed interesting or knows something that you want to learn about. Don't be afraid to jump in there and do that this fall.
I'm joined by Dr. Danielle Ramo, the Senior Director of Research at Hope Lab. For parents that are listening, I'm sure there's a lot of concern about the loneliness factor, but also about the recklessness that we can sometimes see in college-age students. And recklessness right now during a public health crisis can come with a very heavy price. How do they have that conversation about balancing some kind of normalcy with staying safe?
It can be really hard to balance those two things, Ryan, and I recommend that parents really think about technology as an opportunity during this time. It's really easy to frame technology as the enemy, but because it is fostering social connection for some people in the only way they are able to do so, it really, there are ways to support teens and young adults using technology for good. And I think parents have to support those ways. So for example, I recommend that parents help use technology to bring friends together for deep and meaningful connections. So these are things like encourage your children to invite a friend to play video games together rather than playing in an isolated way. Or if you're noticing that your sons or daughters are on social media a lot, encourage them to reach out in another way that allows for more deep connection, like actually making a phone call or having a call that allows a few friends to come together. There are some real healthy ways to use social media as well. I ran a program of research at my lab at UC San Francisco in the Department of Psychiatry that showed we could help young people quit smoking, reduce vaping, and reduce heavy drinking directly through social media. So there are opportunities for young people to enroll in studies that use social media for good. And the other piece that I can't help but mention is that video games get vilified often for being dangerous places, and there are some risks, but social video games supported in a limited way can be a lifeline socially for young people right now. So I encourage parents not to be too scared about allowing their teens to have connections via video games and things like chatting and phone calls.
And finally, where can people find out more about Hope Lab and the research that you've conducted?
Sure. Listeners can go directly to hopelab.org to find out more about the tools that we create to support teen health and well-being and to get involved with us. We invite young people to co-create all of the tools that we make. They're a very important voice in the creation process. And then to find out more about our Nod app that's supporting social connections in college, listeners can go to heynod.com. And if you're interested in bringing Nod to your college campus as a student or administrator, you can reach out to us on heynod.com.
Dr. Danielle Ramo, the Senior Director of Research at Hope Lab. Dr. Ramo, thank you for joining us and sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
As we wrap things up, I want to offer a big thanks to all of our guests and, of course, to all of you for listening. If you want to hear previous episodes of this show, we're on your iHeartRadio app. Just search for iHeartRadio Communities, and you can find me on social media at Ryan E. Gorman. We'll be back same time, same place next weekend. Stay safe.